Hello and welcome to Gentlemen Discussing Mother 3, which is a special podcast in which we're going to do a series, in fact, three podcasts, all on the book club game, which is a bit of a doozy because it is Mother 3. So, do you guys know the sort of long and torturous story of Mother 3's development?
Yeah.
No.
Started out on the N64.
In like, 1998, 1999?
It was after Earthbound came out, wasn't it?
They started on it as soon as... It's the sequel to Earthbound, which is in turn the sequel to Mother, which is...
Earthbound is my favorite game of all time.
Yeah, which is awesome. A series of games written by a copywriter. What's his
name?
He's
kind of a renaissance man, isn't he? Because he's worked with movies and music and stuff too.
He's a very odd, multi-talented man who has a knack for writing things that are very sort of catchy. And so, yeah, he made Mother on the NES, which was sort of a Dragon Quest-style RPG with an eccentric modern setting. And then he wrote Earthbound as well, which was that, but better. So Mother 3 came about N64. It was shown at, like, you know, various game conventions and things. Looked pretty cool. Looked quite dark, actually. The N64 version looks a lot more dark and serious than what we actually got. But, Ape Inc. was making it, and they couldn't get their head around the 3D. Apparently, there was just, like, loads of internal development problems.
The N64 was a tricky console to develop for anyway, though.
Yeah, so it went into development hell, and it eventually got cancelled. And then in 2006, it resurfaced on the Game Boy Advance, which is lovely. But it resurfaced on the Game Boy Advance in Japan, and Nintendo were very hesitant for a long time to bring it to the West because they basically completely sucked at marketing Earthbound. They didn't know how to sell it to the West at all.
They marketed it really hard, but it still
didn't sell.
They did it a lot, but they weren't good at it.
Yeah, the fucking...
The tagline for the game was, "This game stinks."
Yeah, great job, Nintendo.
And they were like, enemies that burp and make smells, and there's a guy who's slime. This is the grossest... It just looked like some sort of shitty relic of 90s culture, even though it was a really funny game. They didn't portray it as such. Anyway, so yeah, the game was a huge commercial failure because it was one of Nintendo's most expensive localizations to date.
Well,
and had a huge marketing campaign. And it was a favorite of many people at Nintendo of Japan, but it just sold like shit.
They made it was more expensive, so they packaged it in with, like, they had a bigger box, and they had this, like, strategy guide to come with it.
Yeah.
Which was apparently really cool.
Mm.
But it still wasn't worth the price to a lot of kids.
What happened then was that a group of fans from the website starman.net started something called the Do-It-Yourself Devotion Project, which was a project to completely localize the entirety of Mother 3 unofficially. And eventually this sort of gained a lot of momentum, and it included probably some of the most important figures in the ROM hacking and emulating community. There were, I think, three different emulator authors all working on the technology side of things, including Bew, the author of BeastNez and various other emulators. And then the actual translation was, and also part of the technology side, was done by Clyde Mandolin, who is a wonderful man whose day job is localized a shitload of anime that I've never watched. But he's a really lovely man.
Is there a link so we can see what it is?
The quality of translation on this game is insane. It's like unbelievable that it's a fan game or like, fan translation.
Yeah, the insane level of detail, and like every like cultural reference is translated and every pun is translated, and you know, it's well, not actually, no, he mentioned in a write-up on his blog that he missed like one pun from the 8th chapter of the game. So yeah, that about brings us to where we are now. There's a fan translation.
Wow, he's been involved in a ton of stuff, high profile stuff.
He's not just some random dude, he's a proper translator, you know. He's not just some random fucking 15-year-old from the internet that took Japanese classes in high school or whatever. Anyway,
like
the team also offered Nintendo to release the game like in the US with their translation for free.
Yeah,
but Nintendo didn't take him up on it because there was some legal trouble involved.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And also, there was some legal trouble with just the game itself because like Keiichi Suzuki and Hip Tanaka, they steal a ton of American music when they write the soundtrack for these games.
Well, no, Mother 3 didn't have that problem. Earthbound had that problem, but Mother 3's music was done by Shogo Sakai, and it mostly uses slightly more conventional samples, although it does lift a hell of a lot from classical music and various other bits and bobs.
Batman.
So yeah, that brings us where we are now. If you'd like to try Mother 3, if you haven't yet and you're listening to this, you can go to, is it mother3.fobby.net or something along that? Yeah, and download the fan translation patch. Hit up a copy of that ROM and play it, because it's a fantastic game, and you will get half an hour into it, and you won't be able to put it down. At least that's what I found.
Oh yeah, the people here today, we're only four people. It's Catsman, Fishheads, and me, Happy Man, and also Mao has never said a word, but he's also here. Yeah.
Hi.
Hello, Mao.
I'm just letting the big boys talk about the stuff they know about. I have made notes about the game, so I know about it. Just know it's about in processor stuff.
So, yeah, let's talk about Mother 3. Go!
Let's, like, brief the plot of the game.
Yeah.
The game's set in these islands called the Nowhere Islands, which, like, there's two islands next to each other. They're out in the middle of the ocean, there's nothing around, and it is invaded and eventually annexed by this group called the Pigmask Army. They take the animals on the island and rebuild them into cyborgs that attack people. And they do all kinds of weird stuff like that, and they eventually, like, they civilize the islands and make them full of technology.
So, yeah, it starts out as, like, a very, I think, idyllic sort of Sakarin farming community, and the pig masks bring with them, like, you know, they bring with them, like, technology and, like, money as well, is one of the main things, and like within sort of 30 minutes of money appearing on the screen, it's caused like a major dispute in the village. Let's see, what was I going to say? Yeah, let's talk about the first chapter some. So the bulk of the game focuses around this one family who's basically completely and utterly torn apart by the actions of the pig masks. You've got like, there are a bunch of like, are they pig farmers?
Sheep farmers.
Sheep farmers.
Sheep farmers, okay. There's Shepherd. Like a bunch of, there's the dad who's kind of like a cowboy.
He's badass.
He's legit badass. And then you've got the mother, Hinawa, and the two children, Lucas and Klaus, who are named after the characters from the Agota Christoff novel, The Notebook. Which is a really obscure reference to make. But
these games have references to Western culture all the time.
Yeah, The Notebook is like a Hungarian novel about... it's about a village in Hungary that is taken over by the Germans in World War II, and it's about two twin boys who kind of go fucked up in the head because of all of the somewhat messed up experiences that they've had. And it's actually... It's weirdly like... It's not the same, but there's definitely parallels with it.
Yeah.
Besides, Ito, much like Hideo Kojima, is a pretty big fan of Western culture, and he likes to reference it. And like, all his three Mother games are set in vaguely American settings.
Yeah.
Earthbound especially.
But... Eagle Land.
Yeah,
it's
Earthbound
such a brilliant
was
name.
Pretty explicit.
Yeah, it's a great name. So, you get to name your the family.
Yeah,
like in every Mother game.
Yeah.
Or you can just
you get
say...
to the Mother one, do you?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Or you can
just say, don't care, and it'll give them default names.
Actually, we forgot to name the last member of the family, the dog, Boney. I think his name's Boney, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, the dog. Did any of you choose to name them differently?
I did not.
I just went with normal names.
I know you did, Mel.
Yeah. You gave them your family's names.
Yeah, I named them after my immediate family, which got
this
weird.
This turned out to be
quickly.
A bad idea. He was actually talking to me while he did it, but I didn't tell him what was going to happen.
Although, what do you name your favorite food and favorite thing? I name my favorite
that's great.
Pancakes, because they are. Which also got more weird because my mum decided to make me pancakes like a few days ago, like just out of the blue. And then my favorite thing, Tsuru from Persona
3. Oh my god, Mal.
Why?
I had to. Alright, what do you guys name it? Because like, I guess it doesn't matter as much to the family thing. Or does it? I mean, I don't know. I haven't played the game entirely.
I just put it on the defaults.
Alright.
Yeah, I just set everything on default for me.
Do the names, if you put Don't Care, do they have like a theme? Like
you can cycle through them.
I know in Earthbound, if you select Don't Care and press Don't Care like twice on each, you got Ness named John, Paula named Yoko.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff named George, Pooh named Paul, and then the dog is named Ringo.
I don't know, I've never looked at the alternate names.
You can't cycle through the alternate names in Mother 3, I don't think. I tried, but there's only one default name.
I mean, it's always interviewed about this game, and it's interesting what Mao said, because he said that he wanted people to name all the characters after their real-life family.
What an asshole!
I know, right? Oh, but he said he thought it resulted in like a stronger emotional reaction from the person playing it.
It's actually, it makes you feel weird, because, like, Lucas, of course, I named him after myself, the main kid, is referred to as the gentler type who would, cry often.
That was you!
He described me when I was, younger than I am right now.
And, well, his brother's Klaus. All like, I'm gonna go beat up those pigmasks, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, my brother's, more outgoing and even has red hair. It's, it's accurate, it's weird. Although my dad is not a cowboy, unfortunately.
Your dad is not nearly as cool as Flint.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, he's not. No,
nobody's dad is as cool as Flint.
No.
Right. Flint's a great character. It's kind of sad that he's underutilized, I think, in the rest of the plot.
Yeah. Why isn't he in the party at the end instead of fucking Boney?
What was the marketing line for this game? I can't remember what it was. It was
strange, funny, heartrending.
Yeah, something like that.
The tagline was no crying until the end.
That was it. That was it. Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Shall we get into the actual start of the story?
Yeah.
So after you learn
awesome music right off the bat, I gotta say, when it pans over the islands and shows all the stuff. This game has great
music. This game has 250 tracks of awesome music.
All of them are great.
Yeah. It's got really great music.
I mean, what I like about it is that it's not just trying to be Earthbound, which I think would have been shit, because it's done by a different guy. And basically, Itoi really wanted to get the Earthbound guys, but he couldn't. And he said, okay, let's try and get someone who I know, and who I think will really understand the story. So he got Shogo Sakai, who works for Brownie Brown. He'd composed for a load of, GBA games, and set him to work. But Shogo Sakai said that he was really stressed out about the music of the game, and he spent so long on it because he knew that Earthbound had kind of a reputation musically, and that he didn't want to disappoint on it. And I think he did really well at creating an original soundtrack.
Like Earthbound soundtrack, a lot of it is this really weird high concept, industrial. Weird music.
When you edit this podcast, are you going to put some music over it? When we get to
some point? I will edit it, and I will do that all the time, because the music's great.
In general, this I've only played a bit of Earthbound, and I've only seen a bit of Mother 1, but in general, those two seem to be much more similar, and this one is kind of a departure.
Yes, absolutely they are. You were made closer to each other.
Yeah. Mother 1 and Earthbound are generally quite sort of poppy, I think, whereas Mother 3 isn't.
I think we should probably get into the actual start of the story.
Okay.
So start off in this tutorial section.
Let's be honest here. Deus Ex Human Revolution, cross-platform 2011, no mirrors. Mother 3, Game Boy Advance. 2006. Not only do they work fully, but also when you look into them, it says looking handsome.
I say, you start a game
your mom
kind of over the lower islands, and you're staying with your grandfather Alec. And he's on a little ranch with sheep. No sheep, pigs, cows, chickens, and T-Rexes.
Yeah, there's the Dragos. They're friendly T-Rexes that come to visit, and you learn You learn how to dash in the game by dashing into them.
I love the dashing. It's so great.
Your dashing is not limited to dashing into T-Rexes. You can dash into everyone in the game at this point, and they'll
say
something.
It's so much better than in like any other game where it's like either hold down a button or switch it on or off.
Yeah, it's great. I was actually like, I really should have spent more time with Dragos because I found them really great and cute. I really love the Dragos.
If you
ram the Dragos from the side, he will fall onto you and squish you.
I like how if you try to head south out of the ranch, then the reason you don't want to head that way is so you don't step on ants.
Yeah. I love
they
it.
Don't want to hurt the ants.
Like that appears like several times in the game. It legit just says like there are ants on the floor and you don't want to step on them.
It's so much better than just I don't think I should head that way yet.
Or
like Hyrule Castle guards telling you not to go there.
Or fucking broken bridge. Hi Twilight Princess. Fuck you Twilight Princess. Just a world of broken bridges. I hate it. Let's talk about the save frogs, because I love the save frogs in this game.
Is there a reason they're frogs? I like that they're frogs, but I can never figure out why it's frogs.
So they can stay in barrels of water, duh.
I guess.
Yeah, they're amphibious, I guess, but I don't know. I don't think that's the reason.
And frogs can be in like many climates, like the desert frog. It's like, I love
a frog that. Never forgets, that's why. When
you find the desert frog, there's a sign nearby explaining why there's a frog in the desert.
Yeah, it's like a long-ass explanation of like, did you know that frogs can actually be found in the desert? It gives you like a specific like frog species and everything.
That's great. After
you battle the Drago, or battle, this little mole cricket comes out. Is that a real animal or no?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Well, he says like, I heard people fighting over here. Well, I am the strongest fighter. And it gives you like this battle tutorial where you fight the mole cricket. And you beat the shit out of him because he's just a cricket.
Yeah.
It's like nothing.
Yeah. He's pretty okay about it, though. He doesn't mind.
By the way, the foreshadowing starts then. And it continues extremely heavily I cannot talk about it because obviously this is for people who've played chapters 1-3 only, but oh my god, there is so much foreshadowing. Literally my brain cannot comprehend going back to it.
Unfortunately, someone spoiled the final boss for me quite a while ago. So
not good for me. Cats, do you think it may
Everyone who played Smash Brothers and looked at Lucas's trophy are gonna know who the villain of the game is, even though it's supposed to be a secret.
I think it might be a bad idea if, like, me and Fishheads, for some parts of it, actually talk about the story, because we don't know what's gonna happen.
True, yeah.
But, know nothing. Nothing except that Happy said Finn is not in your final party and end the game.
What do you think's gonna happen, then?
I don't know.
Chapter 2 starts in a pretty awesome manner with guys in pig masks. This is the first time you see them in the game.
Mm.
They set the forest on fire by way
you're
of...
You're playing as
opening,
Flint at this point.
No interrupting.
Boxes, release
it.
Fireflies.
I'm sorry.
And set the forest on fire. So your fire. So Flint's fireman friend, what's his name, Thomas?
Too big, too strong.
Yeah. He runs and tells Flint...
Yeah, he dashes really weird. It's like his legs just like
he
circle
is like a cartoon
around.
Character.
It's great.
I want to talk a bit about the graphics in this game. It has a very simple art style, but it's a very good art style, and the animation is just incredible.
Yeah, it's got fantastic animations that they have a hell of a lot of character, and it especially comes in a lot of Chapter 1's more emotive scenes and also Chapter 3's more emotive scenes. You can clearly see that there's a huge amount of like effort put into the animation, and I like Earthbound's graphics a lot. I think they're really like, they are charming, but they're also stark, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
The production values in this game are insane compared to Earthbound.
Yeah,
there's a fire and it's wrecking everything's shit. And you're
very
Flint.
Important part to note here: when Thomas goes to tell Flint, he knocks on his door, and the doorknob falls off.
Remember the doorknob.
All right, I'll try to. And so Thomas and Flint are going to try and like stop the fire. You save. Lighter and Fuel, I believe their names are.
Yeah.
Lighter is the dad.
I don't know why I don't know why someone would name their son Lighter, and then that guy would name his son Fuel. What the hell?
Yeah. It's the Japanese and their themed names, man. They love it.
So, like, you beat up, I guess, animals. I forget which animals are in Star.
Getting ahead of something I want to talk about. As Flint and Thomas run to run towards the forest, you see all these people like going to help them. And I didn't take down a lot of quotes, but there's one I took down that I really liked. When, I don't remember what his name is, but there's someone who goes, "Well, if it isn't Flint, I thought I saw someone as manly as me coming this way."
Oh! Yeah.
It was like the...
Yeah.
I love the kind of relationship that the dads in the village have, like their sitcom dads that try to compete with each other.
Really like the guy. His name is Mike, and whenever you see him, he always tries to like offer you some of his slightly dirty and not very tasty cookies.
Oh yeah.
Like time you see him, he's like, "Oh, Flint, would you care to try some of my slightly dirty and not very tasty cookies?"
What's with the guy with the really long legs who rings the bell?
Oh, I was going to get
Letter.
To him. He's a
totally silent man who rings the bell in the village, and he's super tall.
Yeah. That's him.
That's it? Okay. Yeah. I was going to wonder just who he was. Before you actually get into the forest, you have to pray at the forest temple. I don't know if this is significant. It feels like it was to me. And it's weird because it asks you your name as the player, what your name is. Like, tells you, like, I think you're going to go, like, and have a weird, like, journey or something. I forget exactly what it was.
Well, Earthbound does the same thing.
Yeah.
Tells you must forget. Like, it tries to say, all right, in 3 seconds, you're going to forget everything we just talked about right now. 1, 2, 3. Have you forgotten? And they're like, if you say no, it, like, honestly says you must forget. It's weird.
Yeah. So, Mao, I think you lied to the game when you said yes. Forget. Okay.
No, I didn't. I remembered. I wrote it down.
I said no to. Wrote it down.
Yeah, I wrote notes.
He wrote down his own name. It's like my name is.
You didn't mention in the forest the prologue.
has one of the best enemy musics in the game. You meet Mr. Batty, and his theme song is Batman.
Yeah, you go in, and it starts going like, Mr. Batty appeared. But actually, the Mr. Batty music is like more melodically complex than the theme that it's parodying by far. It's a much more interesting piece of music.
It's not as blatant as like the guy with Johnny B. Goode in Earthbound.
Little homages, you know.
Game hasn't talked about it yet, but should we talk about the battle system?
Yes. First of all, I love all the tutorials where the characters go, try to imagine something called a B button, and then like, oh,
focus an energy in your finger.
Try to do something index fingery, if you know what I mean. Like, it's slightly, like, it's dirty talk to talk about, like, the game's buttons directly. It's great.
It's not like, it's like the opposite of Otacon. It's like, Snake, press the action button.
But yeah, the battle system is... A lot of people say that the battle system of Mother 3 is one of its weakest things. I don't think that that's the case at all. I really like the battle system. In the first 3 chapters, it's pretty simple, but the basic building blocks are... you've got how you approach the enemies affects how the battle goes. So it's the same as it is in Earthbound.
And many other games.
Yeah, you can get sneaked up on them. You can sneak up on them, or they can sneak up on you, or you can engage them face to face. And if the sneaking up happens, then the party that sneaks gets an extra move. But some of the enemies have kind of like more complicated behaviors on the overworld. And so you'll actually have to do some like, you know, like some enemies pop up and there's a very little window in which you can sneak behind them.
Some enemies will chase you when they see you. Some will actually run away from you.
And some will like dash towards you and then stop and give you an opportunity to hit them from behind. Then it's pretty cool. The battle system itself is pretty standard for an RPG. It's all... buffs and debuffs, and characters have special abilities, so...
But then...
two of the characters can use PSI, and then Duster can use abilities that paralyze or, you know...
Why don't we talk about each character's abilities as they show up?
Yeah, okay.
I want to bring up Earthbound and Mother 3 have this really neat thing called rolling health.
Yes.
And if you get hit,
yeah.
If you get your, hit, you your health your, is like the damage is not subtracted instantly. It like rolls down.
It's like a gauge on an old gas pump.
Odometer is what it's called.
Yeah. An odometer, yes.
And so you wanna like if you heal yourself fast, you won't take the full damage.
Yeah, so like yeah.
So you want to input the commands really fast.
It'll tell you if you take mortal damage, that'll bring you down to below zero health, so that you can quickly heal yourself before the damage takes full effect.
And sometimes, so it's pretty cool. It's not really useful in the start of the game because all the characters have quite low health, but as you get further into the game, the whole odometer ticking thing, you can slowly see it become more important, and you know, it by the end it will have saved your life a good few times.
Sometimes, yeah, you can like take a mortal blow, but if you exit the battle, it's like you win it, or I guess run away.
Yeah, if you win, you can actually negate
that and just like be okay.
There's not a lot, but there's some enemies that are just like, oh, you killed me, I'm going to explode and deal mortal damage to everyone, you. I hate those things so much. Mess. The fucking trees in the first chapter, god.
Fucking trees.
Anyway, should we talk about the rhythm yet, or...
Yeah.
Wait a bit.
When you attack, you can keep... If you keep tapping the attack button to the rhythm of the battle music, you do a combo that does more damage, like...
But the timing is really, really difficult to get right.
It's quite tricky for people using emulators.
I got a 14-hit combo. Go me.
Did you get a 16-hit one? I got
a 16-hit.
You got a 16-hit, that's shit. I wasn't able to get more than a 3-hit combo in the
first one. Yeah, at the most I get 3-hit combos, but when I actually try, I only get 2-hit combos.
Well, I suspect there are two factors that might affect it for people playing on emulators. The first is that an emulator will always have its processing timing being slightly off, which I know can be a problem for rhythm games. Like, I know basically emulating Parappa the Rapper, it's unplayable.
I also had to turn vertical sync on, because otherwise there was a load of screen tearing.
Yeah. Did you set it to zero frame skip? I would hope.
Yeah, yeah.
The other issue that might come up is a lot of LCD screens add on a ton of filtering, which can create this input lag. On most monitors, you can set it to a game mode that doesn't do any filtering. So I'm not entirely sure if you would still have it if you're emulating on a monitor. So I suspect it's the first one I mentioned, but I was playing it on a flash card, so I didn't have any of that.
Yeah, you keep reminding us.
My actual hardware.
But yeah, the reason the rhythm battle system is really cool is because the complexity of the song that's playing, Mother 3 has something like 60 to 80 different battle music.
Oh god, there's so many.
And different enemies will also have different variations. And what this amounts to is that in the beginning, you'll have lots and lots of really easy sort of 4-4 like songs that you can just tap along to, like with a consistent rhythm. But
like
as
in
the
chapter
game,
one, there's a sound that goes.
Yeah.
That goes like this. But in chapter 8, there's battle music that goes like this. It is much harder to time it.
Yeah, and the thing is, some like as you go on, there'll be different time signatures. There'll be weird little skips and breaks that can throw your timing off. And there's one really cool song called Accelerando that's just a drum going. it increases its speed over time, and you have to tap along at that speed. It's really, it's like mastering the rhythm battle system is something that I haven't done yet, and I'm on my second playthrough. So when people say to me it's not interesting as a game, I'm like, what the hell? Seriously?
Like, it's, functionally, if you do a 16-hit combo, you're pretty much double your attack damage.
I mean, I guess the reason that a lot of people don't find it interesting from a gameplay perspective is because the rhythm battle system is kind of optional, and you can beat the game without it.
Yeah.
Although it sometimes becomes a little bit more grindy in some places.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So, on with the game. You go to save light fuel, even. You get all
from a burning house. You get them out, and...
You go,
and they're both pitch black and covered in soot, but they're okay. And every single person you talk to will mention,
you know, what's so cool fuel
being pitch black and covered in soot.
When you're covered in soot, if you go into the hot spring, the soot that's on your lower body will go away, but the soot on your head will still be there.
yeah,
because they don't want to dip their heads.
Yeah,
and so it has like to hurt his cowboy hat.
It has a separate like animation for the soot washing off, and I think one of the characters might even allude to it. I'm not sure. Just like crazy attention to detail there with the suit. It's great.
There are several moments there where the attention to detail got to pretty Kojima levels.
Yeah. Also, I think your dog drags lighter. Or at some point, the dog drags someone. You go so many screens away.
You go, basically, after, so you get Lighter back, and then the villagers start looking around to see if they can find your family, because your family was due to be coming back to the village.
To get all the injured out, and then Flint exits the inn where they keep all the injured, and there's someone comes up to him and goes, like, you know when the kids made it home back home, right? Like, are they okay? And suddenly it's like, oh shit, and you've got to go find them.
This is where the game starts getting dark.
Yeah.
At least in the first chapter.
This game really doesn't pull any punches. But yeah, you're looking for a way to sort of scale a cliff.
You pick up your dog at this point too.
This rude old guy called Wes is like,
oh, he's awesome.
When
you talk to him earlier, when the fire's still lighting, like when the fire's still burning, you can talk to Wes and he goes, they wouldn't let me in the forest because I'm old. He's really cranky about not being able to help.
He's pretty alright to everyone else, but to his son, Duster. He's a
total asshole to his son.
I named Duster after Animich, our resident Animich of the GLA.
Basically what happens is Wes tells the dog, Boney, to go back and find Duster. And you get, like, it's, first of all, it's set to this really awesome music. And you get this whole, like, fucking montage of the dog, like, running through the forest back home, investigating, feverishly trying to, like, you know, wake Duster up. Duster not being woken up by anything. And then the last scene is, like, the dog just dragging Duster all the way while he's still asleep.
Wes's method of showing Boney how to find Duster is to show him, like, let him smell one of Duster's really nasty socks.
Yeah.
Which he was apparently just carrying around in his pocket.
But later, you get him in your party when you're with Duster, and it'll, like, in battle sometimes, he'll throw one of Duster's socks at the enemy, and it'll paralyze them.
Whoa, really? Most of the time, it doesn't work doing anything.
Yeah.
We should have talked about that. Sometimes you get, like, secondary PCs or NPCs in your party.
They don't
control. They can't get hurt, but they might do extra actions. Like, for example, Thomas. Sometimes Thomas, like, I think...
He sounds his siren.
Yeah.
He never does shit. He never helps. He just runs around.
He's the worst fireman ever. Yeah, he's not big or strong.
He wipes the sweat from his forehead, which really made me laugh. This game is a funny game, by the way. It's like how dark it is. There's, like, so many funny moments.
I love... Anyway. In the around this point in the game, you can go to the cemetery and read all the graves.
They're all puns. They're all puns. Every single one of them.
They're all puns around the word grave. And then... one of them says reserved. And then there's a very minor character. This isn't a spoiler, really, because it's not relevant to the plot at all. But there's a very minor character in chapter one that I went the whole game, my first playthrough, not seeing. But yeah, he's very minor. And then in a later chapter in the game, he's in the grave. Not even joking.
That's horrible.
I know, but it's so cool at the same time. It's some like old dude that you never see and isn't in the story at all.
There's a lot of old people in this village.
Yeah.
Is he the gravedigger?
No, not that guy. Different guy.
Anyway, moving on.
Duster uses his amazing ninja skills to help them scale the cliff face. The wall staples, right?
Basically, he has... You know a stapler, right? And you know staples. Well, Duster's got giant-ass staples that, like, in certain parts of the game, he could nail the staples with his hands into the wall and form a ladder.
Duster's a strong man.
Yeah. He also uses them as a weapon to pin enemies down, which is actually really useful.
Yeah. He has a slight leg handicap, and you can tell because he runs with a limp.
Yeah.
But he only attacks with his legs. Like, he always kicks.
So, you scale up the cliff and stuff. I forget what happens after that.
Well, you chase the pig mask soldiers.
Yeah.
One thing I'd like to add about the pig mask people, they have a theme. Like, of course, you'll be able to hear it in, like, better quality. But when you, like, hear it in-game, you can often hear it on, like, a sort of radio stuff, and, like, loudspeakers. It sounds, like, really, like, shitty and just...
Like, all of their, like, pig mask based crafts just, like, blast the pig mask bat, like their anthem, what is it called? Logotype or whatever. Just everywhere they go, you can tell when they're near, because it makes that noise.
And, like, it sounds really shitty, but I actually kind of, like, really liked it for some reason, just because, like, the amount of, like, the atmosphere it created, it let you know, like, exactly what these guys were.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Their whole philosophy,
like,
behind their army.
Like, yeah.
But yeah, it's great fascist music.
It is.
And then their battle music is also pretty good.
Yeah, battle music.
I really love games that give characters their own theme tunes.
Yes.
Like, I've noticed a recurring theme.
All Nintendo RPGs do this, and it's great.
In my favorite games is characters that have their own theme tunes, and I don't know why it doesn't happen more.
Okami, Jesus Christ.
Oh my god, yeah. But yeah, Mother 3 has a lot of characters, and a lot of them have unique theme tunes.
Anyway, though, so you finally corner the pig masks, and they set a cybernetically enhanced caribou on you.
Yeah, your first cyborg animal enemy. Reconstructed caribou.
Yeah, I guess what they do is they capture animals and then cybernetically enhance them.
We also forgot to mention, in the burning house where you save fuel, it's not really a boss fight, or mini boss fight with a...
Flying mouse.
A flying mouse.
Mouse with fly wings.
So,
wings.
I believe this... I think we'll get to this sooner, but the Pig Mask Army's philosophy is taking animals and making them stronger, or bigger and better and badder.
Yeah, they leave you
in
notes.
It says though in their notebook.
Yeah.
They're just like, all of these animals suck, they're boring, we're going to make them better.
So what they do, I believe there are like two main classes thus far for me anyway. Chimeras and cyborgs. Chimeras are like animals created from like pastiche mix of animals. So
yeah,
obviously
they
the flying
put two animals together to create a new animal.
Yeah,
and then the cyborgs are
self-explanatory. Those like cyborg animals, like the fucking cyborg caribou. First proper butt.
Back caribou of all things. Anyway,
they also have fireflies, which are just like fire spouting robot bugs, which they use to cause the forest fire. And after you beat the caribou, keep on going. I forget exactly what happens next.
So no, it's the point where you like the camera pans up very slowly, and there's just
a
scrap of the mother's dress, like caught on a little stick or something up there.
That's where and the game drops its first bombshell.
Yeah,
and you keep
not yet. The villagers find the kids.
They find the kids, and they're like, so they like probably fell in the river or something. I don't think it tells you exactly what happened, but you can probably figure it out for yourself. Fall in the river, they get fished out, and the villagers set up a fire. They wrap them in a blanket, and they're drying their clothes. The kids are fine.
They get around this campfire, and this guy shows up.
Brunson.
What an asshole, by the way. Brunson.
tries to water it down for you.
Cast,
he says, All right, Flint, I got good news and bad news. What do you want to hear first? I'll tell you the good news. The good news is I found this giant dragon's fang. It'll make a great weapon for you. Here, take it. But the bad news is I found it in your wife's chest. She's dead.
Yeah.
What a dickhead.
Well, I've thought about this a lot, and I think
you made a great analogy.
I think the reason, I think the reason is that Itoi was trying to talk about I think how coddled these people are and how emotionally immature they are, that they've actually never had a great tragedy happen before like this. And so when it comes time to tell Flint, the guy just doesn't know. He's just like, well, I guess I can make a positive thing out of this as well.
And this is definitely my oh shit moment, because I named the mom after
and
my
Flint
mom.
Is no different, because when he finds out, he just starts beating the shit out of the other villagers.
He's
really angry.
It's an amazing scene. Yeah, he goes apeshit and everyone's trying to calm him down, but he just starts freaking out and grabs a bit of wood from the fire and just beats the shit out of some people, and they have to restrain him. The animation's amazing. It's an emotional scene, I think. You can really see how much he's suffering.
Yeah. Despite this, you can actually keep going, I think, as Flynn. You get locked up in the jail, which, how coddled these people are.
No one has ever been locked up in the jail before. Flynn is the first ever prisoner.
And they have a poster outside their sheriff jailhouse, and says, "No sheriff wanted. After all, we don't have any crime here." I think Klaus, is it, fetches the key.
Klaus gives you the key, gives you a file in the middle of an apple. And Klaus, he had when you talk to him, if he's by the fire, he'll say damn. And again, his lines there give you the impression that he's kind of he's up to something, which he is, obviously.
Klaus is the hard one, strong-headed, hot-headed, I guess.
Yeah,
of
a little bit
sons.
Too, that.
Lucas is just very gentle, and gets pretty fucked up because his mom died. He completely cries at the grave.
Yes, he does.
So Klaus bails his dad out of prison.
And Flint has no time for mourning. He just goes out and tries to find out exactly what happened. He keeps searching around. For the Pigmask guys?
He knows that Drago did it, so he goes to get the Drago's fang from the guy, because the only thing that can pierce a Drago's hide is its fang.
The people in the village, they're kind of afraid of Flint, but they don't try to lock him back up.
Yeah.
Flint, you're out of prison already? Well, whatever.
kind of
They don't know how to run a prison at all.
At this point, by the way, there's two things that I'd like to mention. First of all, did anyone go to the pig farm in the south of the village?
I think I did.
Because you run into a certain character there who appears in chapter 3, who's kind of an asshole.
It's a facade.
Yeah, you've run into facade there, and he's buying butcher's pigs. I like that little detail.
Another thing about the pigs, whenever you talk to a pig, they say something like, "Hey, did you know that there's a secret about Mother Free that only pigs know? But I can't tell you." And all the pigs are talking about the secret of Mother Free that only pigs know.
You should have mentioned this before, but as the frogs talk, every animal, I believe, in this game, talks to you. Well, they would say they're animal sounds, but in brackets.
Yeah, they talk directly to the player. They don't talk to the character.
As they do in Earthbound.
If you try and move near chickens, they'll start running away because obviously they think you're chasing them. And if you have that, you do manage to talk to them, "Hey, why are you chasing us? Leave us alone." It's great.
I should mention at this point, you know how the frogs say, they go, "Hop, save your game"? Yeah. Well, there's a cow that says, "Hop, save your game." That's what frogs say, isn't it?
It's great.
I love how the frogs always tell you to give your regards to the next frog. See,
I really like the frogs in general. The first frog that you meet, he says, "What is it?" He says, "A story is a series of memories. Your memories are remembered with other memories, which in turn become memories themselves. It's important to remember your memories, otherwise you'll forget them. Well, he says something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a really nice little, you know.
And, sometimes at different points, the frogs will say different things. Like, if it's before a boss battle, a frog will be like, you should definitely save your game.
Yeah. Also, there's a very cool variety of the frogs that I won't talk about now because they're in other parts of the
Flint
game.
Flint can go to the graveyard at this point, where all the people are mourning, and they already had the funeral.
Yeah,
without Flint, what the hell?
They had the funeral while he was in prison.
The chapter's called of Night of the Funeral. But yeah, they get a nice grave for you know.
There's some people giving their condolences. One guy's just getting drunk out of sadness.
I think he just likes to get drunk. He's like, at a time like this, what else can I do? Oh yeah, he's drunk and he just rationalizes it in different ways.
Yeah, he's like, well, now I have to drink.
So
Lucas, it's what you always do.
Lucas is still at the grave, crying, of course, because he's like, he's sad, as he should be.
Klaus off, he's going places.
Klaus fucks off, and like, You think he's going off to kill a Drago. Don't know differently.
He said, I'm going to get stronger. I'm going to get so strong, even Dragos won't stand a chance to me. And then he just leaves.
He's at point, revenge pretty quickly.
You go off to find...
No. Before that, right, can I just... Like, this isn't really relevant to anything, but look at Hinoa's grave, right? Does that say MILF on it? Because it really looks like that.
I'm going to find a screenshot.
What?
Well,
let me bring up a screenshot of it. I swear to God, it says MILF on it.
Well, guess what? Well done. You're ruining.
Oh my God.
You're ruining.
Are you serious?
This.
Well, it there could it also is. Say OILF, depending, but that. God damn.
Oh my God, you're right! We should get our minds out of the guts.
Oh my.
Well, I'm sure it's just a coincidence.
So, you go on. You get the Drago tooth made into... They say it's a sword, but it's more like a spear. You don't actually use it as a weapon, so it becomes a key item. And you go on... You get.
Up with Alec,
who is Hinoa's dad.
Alec
is surprisingly composed.
Best character ever.
Alec's like, great.
He acknowledges, you know, it's very sad, but you've just got to stay positive. And then Flint's, like, trying to grieve while they're walking to find Klaus through the tunnel. And Alec is just cracking stupid jokes.
Stupid puns. Like, you got vines. The vine.
The vines go up because they're
those
divine.
Puns.
And he makes he's making like fart jokes, and Klaus is in mortal danger.
This game has a lot of dads, but this guy is the maximum dad.
Yes, he is the daddest. He's great.
Actually, before you go into the tunnel, so you meet the Mal Gypsies, I think they're called.
Mal Gypsies.
That's after you go into the tunnel.
Is?
No, it's before.
Oh, actually, maybe it's not. Regardless. You meet the Gypsies. The Gypsies are awesome. I love them. They're some of the best characters in this game.
The Gypsies are a seemingly immortal group of red-haired dudes.
They're genderless.
Oh, they're red-haired. Yeah, they're hermaphrodites.
Wow.
They're immortal and live forever.
They are age-neutral, morally neutral, and gender-neutral. That's what Itoy said. Everything about them is supposed to be, like, neutral.
But they're pretty alright guys.
They're neutral.
although they were like, yeah, we saw Klaus, we gave him a powerful technique. Psy, by the way, is basically kind of like magic in this game. More like psychic powers, but.
Yeah, psychic powers.
Regardless. We sent him on his way.
They live in this kind of weird shell house, which I'm pretty sure appeared in the first Mother.
Yeah,
sort
it
of.
Did. It's the way you get to Magicant in the first Mother.
And they just like eat sweets and party all the time.
Yeah.
But they're like,
pretty fab.
Yeah, they send you on your way as well. And also, the frogs are their messengers, and they can communicate to all amphibians. And that's the funny thing. Because it's like, you get to the lake where their house is, and there's two frogs, I think, by the side of the lake. They're both blue. And the one on the left, if you talk to him, say, I am the wrong frog. Talk to the frog on the right. So you have to talk to the right frog, who is the right frog, and you talk to him and he like opens the way to the Mad Gypsies.
Yeah, makes like a bridge out of frogs.
It reminded me of something like a Space Funeral, I don't know why.
Yeah.
Well, Space Funeral has this kind of mother-esque vibe to it at points.
So yeah, the Mad Gypsies send you on your way, go through the tunnel. I forget at what point you fight these enemies, but you just find like normal enemies. But there's this one enemy that's a bush. I thought it was just like a normal mimic type enemy, but if you actually get in, because it will attack you, it will just get into the counter with you. I thought it was a normal enemy, like, and when it used the life up on me, I thought it was leeching my health.
What?
Wait, what? An enemy that uses life up on you?
Yeah, the bushes. The bushes.
You. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They heal you, and then they run off.
Yeah, then I realized, oh, it's nice, it's just healing me. So other games have mimics. Mother 3 has bushes that heal you for free.
I had no idea that those are in the game at all.
They're insane. Neither
did I. Are you supposed to be able to fight the Crag Lizards at that point? Because they always killed me, so I ran away from them.
I killed the Crag Lizards, but they were difficult, yeah.
They were difficult for a bit, but I was just killing them a lot.
Flint has no CSI. He has no psi powers of any kind, so...
What are his special abilities? Just like an assortment of melee abilities?
He has one attack that just misses all the time. It's kind of shit, to be honest.
Power smash?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
It's never hit for me. I've played this game twice.
Well, you must be really unlucky because it hit
I am
for me.
Really unlucky.
For the first five times I used it, it hit. So I was really weirded out when it missed every single other time.
But you meet in this like canyon area, you meet Titanis, which are from Mother 1. The weird scorpion things.
Yeah.
They're pretty freaky.
They really creep me out.
Yeah, you get to this weird valley, desert, plateau after...
Plateau.
It's a plateau. After you go through the tunnel, and Alec is cracking terrible jokes, but speaking of Alec, his abilities in battle are, if you're at low health, he'll heal you, and there's something else. Can't remember.
So
when you get to the end of the plateau, you run into... Oh, well, first you see a baby Drago playing with one of Klaus's shoes.
Yeah.
Yep. And then you get to the end of the plateau and you see a big Drago.
You find out why it is now hostile, even though it was really before. Like, because the pig masks turn it into a cyborg.
Yes.
Much like the caribou.
The game's done a good job of making you hate the fucking pig dudes. Like, I wanted to wreck their shit so hard. Music, the fact they set the fire, what they do to the animals, their appearance, their pig theme, I guess.
I mean, we'll get to it later, but no part of any video game ever has made me feel like hating something as much as chapter 3 of this game.
You fight the Drago, the cyborg Drago, which is probably one of the harder boss fights that early in the game.
It is a tough fight.
Yeah.
What I did was I think I'd save like all of my bombs and stuff, so I just hit it with those.
I also did. I knew it was the end of the first chapter now, so I was like, let's just throw all my bombs.
After I ran out of healing items, I just spammed Power Smash, and I think I managed to hit it twice out of like five times and dropped it somehow.
Speaking of bombs, you can, in Tasmela Village, you can go behind Wes's house.
Yeah.
And behind his house, it's invisible, but there's a chest that has infinite thunder bombs.
Whenever
you are in the village, you can go here. Like,
yeah, it's pretty
despite
cool.
Despite what chapter it is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
You only learned about it in chapter 2, but I found it earlier. I was like, cool, thunderbomb.
So yeah, you beat the Cyber Drago up. You have to use the key item Drago Fang.
Oh yeah,
I think that
otherwise
it's
invulnerable to your attacks before you can even hurt it.
Yeah. After you beat it, it's like on the ground, it's defeated.
Yeah, and Flint's really mad, and you can tell that he's like about to stab the shit out of it.
Yeah.
The baby.
Yeah, no, the Drago.
And then
the
the most cutest baby animal ever, the baby Drago, comes out and is like treating it like it's a parent, and it's like, Flint, this isn't going to fix anything. You're only be putting the baby Drago through what your boys have to go through.
Yeah, it's a great moment. It really is.
It's like,
Drago literally starts crying on the floor. Yeah. and the camera pulls back to reveal Klaus is lying in an inaccessible bridge.
So he's not
behind
dead.
The plateau that you can't get to.
And Flint doesn't see him.
And Flint doesn't see him, yeah. Which is, like, kind of a gut punch.
Yeah, they go looking everywhere, and he's right there, you can't see him. But anyway, there's that's the end of the chapter.
Yep. What's the second
Night
chapter called?
What's the second chapter called?
No, that's the first one.
The second one is called Mind of a Thief or something.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. I think the first one is Night of a Funeral, and then the second
something
one is
about
Night of
a
Thief.
That's the one. Adventure. Adventures.
Now, I like the second chapter a lot. I think there's some good, like, mystery type stuff in there, and some, like, necessary establishing of important things that happen later in the game. And it's also the chapter where psi powers come in, so it's, you know, it's necessary.
Second one,
I kind of feel like after the amazing first chapter that sort of kicked off the story, that this chapter kind of. It the story doesn't really go anywhere until halfway through it. There's not much, like, plot resolution to
true.
It.
But you play as Duster in this chapter.
The thief that helped Flint earlier. He's the star of this chapter. Him and his great dad.
Wes gives him all of these thief tools, and he's like, I think there's 7 in the basement, but he's not sure. And there's actually 5.
And
old guys in Mother 3.
And they all have a special use. In particular, there is the one that puts enemies to sleep. Mm. Because it'll, when they're asleep, it lets you hear their heartbeat, which is actually the rhythm that you need to follow for the battle system.
Yeah. Yes. It's like, if you're good with music and stuff, you can infer what the rhythm is from the music, because it's not synced up with any particular instrument, and sometimes it's offbeat, sometimes it's not.
If you're a bit tone deaf like me, then it can be a trouble.
Yeah.
So, the other thief tools are, we have the sleepy hypnotized thing. You have a scary mask, which you'll put on and scare the enemy, lower its attack. A feather to tickle the enemy and lower the defense.
Tickle stick.
A smoke bomb to make them cry. And I think there's the last one, but I forget what it was. Then it makes them stink.
Stink bomb. I think, yeah.
Of course, the aforementioned wall staples, which are very useful, because they just, like, tie down enemies for about 2 turns.
So, Wes wants you to break into this castle, this abandoned castle that's past the graveyard, to find some important item.
He doesn't tell you what it is, he's just like, you're a thief, you know what an important item looks like,
go get it.
It's
an important item, you know what it looks like.
So, any thief worth his salt will know that.
You have to go through this tunnel under the graveyard. Oh, and is that the point where you meet the zombies?
Yes. The pigmen bring zombies, like, to life.
Yes.
But before that, once again, you run into Facet on the way out of the village.
Yeah.
Or
that's right.
Oh, yeah.
You just bump into him and Salsa coming back from the north.
Is that when you... meet them. He's an important character in Chapter 3. And then you run into Butch. Character from the village who has been given money, and he doesn't know what it is, but he just knows it's good.
Yeah.
He's like, an age of money is about to begin, or something.
Yeah.
And he throws the money in the well because he doesn't want anyone else to find it. Like, he's instinctively extremely protective of his money.
If you go and check the well, then it'll say, you got 50,000 DP. But then you put it back.
Yeah. I check the well.
He's such an ethical thief. But I love how Butch goes to you like, no, look, you're the thief of the village. I'm going to hide this money in this here well. It'll just be a secret between me, Butch, and you, the thief. Okay? And then he leaves. The whole thing is such a setup.
Well, yeah, because Facade, the merchant...
Yeah,
bought all his pigs. foreshadowing. Well,
yeah, for the yeah, but you learn later that it was kind of a setup. So anyway, I just like to point
the whole
out
thing, the whole thing reminds me of an Asterix story.
It does?
Where Asterix and Obelix?
Vaguely.
Yes.
It's Asterix and Obelix is this French comic book about it's set in the Roman Empire, and there's this village of indomitable Gauls that will not succumb to the Roman annexation. Like they want to stay independent. And they do this with the help of the magic potion. And like the Romans constantly try to take over this village, but they can never do it because the Gauls are too strong. And so in one book, they send like a merchant to the village, and he tries to like make everyone fight by giving them money and like making them start businesses and stuff like that.
All right, you get them to turn against one another.
It's a lot like what Facade does in Tismilla Village.
I think greed is a central like point of Mother 3's plot, and I'd just like to praise Tomato, the guy who translated it again, for Facade's name, because it means fake in French and it means greed in Arabic, and that's an awesome.
That's
well, it's spelled F-A-S-S-A-D.
Yeah, which is greed in Arabic.
F-A-C. Oh, it is greed in Arabic. Okay.
Yeah, also, it's a homonym of Facade.
Right, that too.
Yeah. So
that's great, for chapter great 3 though.
But you see him now, so whatever. Yeah.
So you fight these zombies, and they're Ness and Paula from Earthbound.
They are?
They're dressed like them.
Yeah, they're dressed like them.
I don't think they're actually canonically Ness and Paula.
No, because there's two Nesses and two Paulas, but they're just dressed.
It's a little reference. I like it.
So there's not that much story, or like there's much less compared to chapter 1 and chapter 2, so we'll probably blow through it
chapter 2 quickly. Is all about establishing stuff that becomes more important later on.
But so you go,
and also it's a little bit about like the lore of the world as well, like Asohi Castle is kind of a weird little bit of history, I think.
Yeah, but you go into this castle through a tunnel under the graveyard, and there's all these ghosts in it.
Yeah, but before that, again, you can find the doorknob that Flint lost in chapter 1.
The doorknob is in this chapter as well.
Yes,
I didn't know
that. I think so, at least. You can. It's in the vegetable patch that the gravekeeper runs. You can find the doorknob right there. It pops up throughout the game.
In the vegetable patch, there's a sign, and if you read it, it says potato toe.
The ghosts that you fight give you the best status effect in the game, which is making you sick so that you can't eat healing items.
Oh, right, yeah, fuck that. Seriously, I hate that.
It's such a cool idea, though.
But you need to carry, what is it, fresh mint to make yourself again.
So
Severix just joined us.
Yeah, he's playing
Mother 3. You're welcome to turn your mic on. Hello?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, Animage here.
Hiya.
That joke's not getting tired.
No, not at all. You said like Deb was gonna come in and say, "What's up, guys? Animachi."
I was wrong,
but you're still right. Thanks for proving Cat's right.
So
you're welcome.
In the castle, you meet all these ghosts.
Yeah.
that are just having a party.
They're pretty friendly guys.
Yeah. The stinky ghosts are kind of dicks, but friendly ghosts, they're alright.
Oh, and you can also trade rotten eclairs with one of the ghosts, and you need it to get an important item, which is a rope snake.
Even players who haven't played this game know that characteristics of a snake. Lucas's up B.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or no, grab. I mean,
in Brawl.
The rope snake is a cool dude. He's just he's always dependable. He's always there for you. You know, great. Great snake.
But funny thing about the ghosts, they're from a party, of course, the party you got food and drink, and they're ghosts. And they do eat and drink, but it just completely passes through their
just falls
incorporeal
through them.
They just
like the feeling of eating and drinking.
It's good.
Yeah. It's alright, guys.
The ghost says something like, what, wine is the water of life?
I agree.
The Ghost who's on the piano is a bit negative about War Staples. He doesn't like War Staples that much. Though there's one particular ghost in the kitchen, not the chef ghost. He's next to a present. We forgot to explain, but chests in this game, like stuff where you get items from, look like present boxes. And there's special blue ones, which you open it, they have like the map of the area in them.
Yeah.
And the best part about this ghost is he will explain, blue present boxes, like with blue ribbons and blue exterior, always have maps in them. You come to him like again two more times in the game, and he'd be like, I know I've explained this before, you're not even the same person, but blue present boxes have maps in them. He's very, very keen.
I really love like the fourth wall breaking like humor in it. It's just, it's great. And yeah, I actually wrote that on my summary. It's like one of the only things I wrote is just, I love that ghost.
It's so cool.
It's
so subtle. It's not overdone at all, but it's just there and it's good. Yeah,
exactly.
So,
Psycho Mantis.
You get up into... What do you find? You find like a cup or something.
No, you fight Mr. Passion.
Mr. Passion.
One of my favorite bosses.
He's a bit tricky, he is.
Oh, hey. Don't forget, you catch a glimpse of a future character here.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah, you met
Kumatora runs past, but you don't get to talk to her or anything. Anyway, Mr. Passion, I love this guy. He is one of my favorite characters. I've said it like three times, but seriously, Mr. Passion is great.
You meet him and he's not really conducting any music in particular. He's just like making all the shit in the room fly around, and you talk to him and he says, "Do you appreciate my music?" or something along those
lines. If you say yes, then he'll just be like, "Okay." But if you say no, then he'll fight you.
Then he gets pissed off and he fights you. Yeah.
And his battle music, goddamn, is it good.
It's a medley
of like classical music pieces.
Aside from Mr. Passion, there's some other interesting enemies in the castle. Like, there's this enemy in the basement called Big Bros. They're actually really small little pink guys.
Yes, I was about to talk about Bro and Big Bro.
Really easy to kill, or like tame, or whatever.
They run away from you when you...
Yeah, they also run away. They always try to use side techniques on you, magic, and it never works, ever. You just beat their ass.
Notable thing about Bro and Big Bro, if you attack them from behind, they have a very visible butt.
Definitely.
They have some buttocks.
I like the barrels too, just because of their music.
Yeah. The barrelmen, they always put me to sleep or paralyze me or something.
They're annoying, but
there's one barrelman before Mr. Passion who will always drop nut bread if you beat him.
Yeah, and you had to grind him.
I had to grind for that nut bread because I used the login.
I didn't have to grind for Mr. Passion particularly, but I actually did a bit of grinding in the hallway before him just because the rockin' ghosts always handed my ass to me, and I don't know why.
The Zoe Castle also has two bonus bosses.
The sleeping, or the ghost knight.
One is the Ghost Knight. Yeah, he's pretty hard. He's got a sword and shield, and you can kill the sword and shield individually. And before,
if you kill the sword and shield individually, it literally makes him like no more difficult than a regular knight enemy. It's great.
I thought you could do that, but I didn't.
But then there's also the strawberry slime.
Oh, strawberry slime!
He is so strong. Like, why? Why is a pot of strawberry jam slime?
Is this supposed to be a joke about metal slime and Dragon Quest?
I don't know.
That's the
maybe.
Only thing I can think of.
What do you get for killing the strawberry slime?
Gives you a lot of experience.
Yeah, you get it.
I love if you kill the ghost knight though, then the ghosts like made a big deal about you beating him, but then after you kill him, they're just like, "Yeah, we hated him. We just wanted someone to get rid of him."
Yeah, he was a jerk. Thanks for killing him, and that's it. That's all you get is a thank you.
There's some other interesting enemies. There's the art ghosts. Like, there's some paintings, and sometimes it'll turn out to actually be a ghost and it'll attack you. It's kind of freaky the first time it happened to me because I think it happened right after I opened the prison. And the funny thing that can happen during the fight is, like, your tertiary, like, secondary NPC characters who join your fights, sometimes they might not do anything. But other times, sometimes the enemies might not do anything. Like, art ghost talked about art and wasted a turn.
Oh, he speaks passionately about art.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Also, Duster, if he gets attacked from behind, sometimes he'll actually do, like, a back kick. So they do damage. It's actually pretty great. Duster's got moves.
If you get ambushed, it goes like, Duster reversed ambush with blinding speed and just kicks him in the face.
He flipped over their back or something.
Duster, despite being a guy with a limp, and he's got moves.
He's a real ass kicker.
He is.
So after you fight Mr. Passion, Mr. Passion's thing is he throws stuff in the room at you. So, and he'll throw more stuff at you the longer the fight goes on.
And
so
his super attack is throwing everything but the kitchen sink at you.
But the kitchen sink, yeah.
Yes. Well,
starting off, he'll just like throw a mouse at you and it does very little damage.
It does
and
like 2 damage.
Then he'll throw bigger and bigger stuff at you until it's everything but the kitchen sink. After you fight him, then you get, what do you get? Oh,
the
you get...
The Noble Spittoon!
The Noble Spittoon, or something. Yeah.
Duster thinks is the important item that Wes wanted him to steal. And you take it, you get back to Wes, and Wes isn't happy.
Yeah,
he chews you out.
I love the cutscene that plays, you bring it to him, and he sits it down, and he's like, almost impressed by it. Like he leads Duster to believe that he's done the right thing, and then he just smashes it and goes, "You idiot! You idiot!"
It's really fucking angry.
Yeah.
Then he realizes that what he really wanted was deeper. No, because you
Oh, we forgot to mention that
the character you meet, you kind of see earlier, drop something. A pendant. Yeah.
He's much more interested in that.
Yeah. So he wants you to go back to the castle to where you found the spittoon.
It belongs to the princess of Asoi Castle.
Yep. Yeah. And at this point, the pig mask army is invading the castle with their tanks. And so you've got to fight them or just go past them as you go into the castle.
They have claymen, which are these Frankenstein's monsters.
Golems
made out of clay.
Golem type things, yeah.
I love the claymen. As far as mook enemies go, they're really good.
I think in the castle before you could find a door along with like panels that showed weird like motions on a stick figure. Of course, you couldn't go through it. But when you get there with Wes, Wes knows the secret dance to open the door. This entire
is a great dance.
It's so good. It is like video games rarely make me laugh, and this is the first time in a long time.
I gotta say something about the castle though before we when the pig masks invade, they chase every single ghost into the kitchen.
Yeah.
And so you go into the kitchen, it's just full of ghosts.
Yeah,
it's full really of so sad. Many ghosts that it slows down the Game Boy Advance slightly.
That didn't happen on me with me. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but
we'll link a YouTube video of the
band. So good.
We cannot do it justice with audio.
Yeah,
amazing. My first favorite time. New old person dance in a video game, even better than
what was
the
your
one in Okami.
Favorite?
The one
okay.
in Okami.
Yeah, that's a good old person dance. But yeah, I love it. And Duster keeps, like, he tells Duster to turn around and not look. And every time Wes turns around, Duster turns and, like, stares at him.
Like, at first, Duster just sort of, like, glances behind him, but eventually he just turns around.
So when he sees what's going on, he's just like, I can't not look at this.
This opens a secret passage deeper into the castle where you meet Kumatora.
Who's about to cut her own leg off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She's a pretty spunky girl. Yeah,
she's the tomboyish princess of the castle.
Like a sailor.
Yep, she's the first character who you have who can use PSI.
And I'd like to point out at this point that the way you learn PSI is there's insert character here, started to feel feverish, and then for a while they won't be able to like dash, and then it'll go, and they'll have a new ability. And someone asked Itoy about that, and he said, it's like menstruation. I made learning PSI like menstruation.
I wasn't going to say this, but now that you've said that, I don't feel so weird anymore.
No, it is menstruation.
Yeah, what was happening to Kumatora, I was like...
What?
And like,
I didn't catch on to that at all.
A frog that I explained it was like, all right, Kumatora's going to be feeling a bit weird for some time, but just like go with it. At first I thought, is she pregnant? She's like morning sickness? I was like, at first I was scared, like, this game's going to get even more dark now. But no, it's fine. They're just learning a new ability.
So
I don't know why he made it menstruation, though.
The enemies that you fight in the secret passageway, fuck deeper in the enemies. Castle, are fucking annoying. There's these flame guys. The broom guys that'll send you back to the beginning of the area.
Flame guys only take damage from PSI, which is obviously so you're supposed to learn to use PSI.
And then there's the cloaks. Those are pretty annoying, too.
Yeah. Just use fire on them. It's not a big deal.
Because the thing that got me is that there's a boss at the end of it, and the enemies kept doing this PSI drain ability, so I ended up going into the boss with very little PSI, which made Kurikura totally useless.
Yeah.
Also, they used the drain ability like 5 times. I was like, come on, use something else!
apparently, mana or MP regenerating items are like sweets, so you get like magic tarts and
they're pastries.
Gelatin. Yeah. Yeah.
Too bad there's no magic cake from Earthbound.
Yeah,
restores your MP.
Anyway, so Duster, Kumatora, and Wes. Oh yeah, Kumatora's name. It is Japanese for bear tiger, which I think is a pretty awesome name.
Right.
But you get to the real item that Wes wanted to get, which is the hummingbird egg, I think it was called.
Yes.
Yep.
But a huge hummingbird egg.
Yeah, but at the point when they get it, the pig masks are after them.
And, when they grab it, they activate a trap that dumps them into this dungeon deep in the castle.
That's piled with skeletons.
Yep, I was about to say, piles of skulls. And there's a huge snake.
Yep, and you gotta fight the huge snake.
It's a... first they get dropped down, and then they get drained out. And we'll come to that later.
What is this snake called? It's like the
very...
Oso Snake.
Oh my god.
Because it's Asohi Castle. Oso Snake.
Oh! No.
Right. He's not... I don't find him that hard of a boss fight. But then Duster slash Animich was really grinded up.
It's a hard boss fight if you'd lost all your fucking PSI, let me tell you.
Well, I didn't. And,
Yeah, so that's chapter 2. They beat the boss and they get flushed out into the...
sea, probably.
Into the river or something.
Into the river, yeah.
And Kumatora and Wes are fine, and they're discovered together by the village people.
What happens at the very end of the chapter is Butch from earlier accuses Duster of stealing his money from the well.
Duster isn't around because Duster is lost, as is the hummingbird egg, so at this point I have to assume Duster has it with him.
He thinks Duster did it.
Butch thinks Duster stole his money.
Yep. So then, on to chapter 3, which is called... what now?
Suspicious Peddler.
Oh, the Suspicious Peddler.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, chapter 3 is an amazing chapter. It is.
It's pretty great.
It's amazing. I absolutely love it. And that... yeah, someone else talked for a bit.
So, you play as this monkey... who he and his girlfriend have been taken prisoner by the Pig Mask Army. And so the facade, the merchant, wants you to pose as his trained monkey in his kind of little circus act.
Like,
so he's got this collar he uses to electrocute him.
He uses it a lot.
And
Yeah, he just uses it every time he tells you to do something and you don't do it immediately. And sometimes he abuses the shit out of you. Like, even if you do something, you do it well, he's like, I'm just going to electrocute you anyway. And every time it plays this animation of, like, Salsa getting, like, shocked, and it's not graphic, but man, it just makes you depressed to see this fucking, like, little monkey just getting I shouldn't say electrocuted, because that technically means, dead, but
fatal.
Getting shocked over and over and over again by this guy.
If you had a drinking game where you had to drink a shot every single time, you would probably be a dead man.
Facade is just, he's some, like...
He is such an asshole.
He is, he's like... he's.
They've also got your girlfriend captive, so if you want to do what they say to save her.
And even, not even Facade, like, the pig masks are running back into the, spaceship that they got out of, whilst Salsa and Facade are sort of sitting there, and Facade's bossing Salsa about and shocking him. And then one of the pig masks stops, turns back around, kicks Salsa onto the ground, and then gets back into the spaceship and fucks off. Like, so, oh my god.
Facade, despite his, like, he looks different to the Pigmask guys. He's not in it there yet. He's a, I assume a big cheese among them. Yeah. He orders them about in
yeah.
much of the chat.
He's like a lieutenant or something.
Also, you can name Salsa like all player characters, and I named him after our resident Brazilian, Lord Ramal.
Not El Jefe.
Which, yeah, but it's part of the moment. I had to. Anyway.
You go through this desert, and there's dung beetles in the desert. And there's one dung beetle who doesn't have any dung to roll around, so you've got to fight the other dung beetles to get dung for him, and he'll give you experience points when you do.
When you get him the dung.
Which you kind of need, because Salsa is pretty low level when you start.
Yeah.
Salsa is very, very weak. Like, Chapter 2 will be the height of your power thus far, since you have, like, two party members, and one can you sigh. Part 3 brings you down to, like, zero.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who do speedruns of Mother 3, who basically try and beat the game without fighting any enemies, or fighting as few as possible.
Christ.
They say that because Salsa starts at such a low level, he starts level 1, the battle with the Cactus Wolf is the hardest one in the whole speedrun of Mother 3, because you haven't fought a single enemy at that point, and he's still level 1.
But so the other problem is that his only he can't really do anything melee related. His only abilities are dancing and throwing ancient bananas to make the enemy slip and fall.
There's some other stuff. It's mainly the dances or making them
laugh. The monkey mimic is particularly good, especially boss fights. Taking the end of Chapter 3, like, If it fires a laser at you, the monkey just fires a laser back at it.
Yeah, it's cool.
Tank used cannon. Salsa used cannon.
There's a weird enemy in the desert called the Sara Sahara. I have no idea what he is.
Oh, yeah. That's so weird.
It's like, oh, fuck this.
Also, how about the part where you find, like, a banana? Oh, it's like a luxury banana or something, and Facade takes it away.
Yeah,
so he
takes
it
away and eats it, and then if you walk over the banana skin, you fall over. Like, it's just depressing. Also, he makes you fight like a dog. He makes, like, a tiny little monkey fight a huge-ass cactus wolf.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to do shit.
I mean, he does, like, help out.
He does help
out. Like, the entire time. Like, he does the most damage, probably.
Yeah, he does way more damage than you do. He's like he's a secondary character.
Well, at least he's not like
but he also
doesn't
take any damage. You take
yeah.
all the
yeah.
damage.
Yeah.
But,
he uses you as a human, or he uses you as a simian shield.
Yeah.
I love
sometimes he hides in your shadow.
Yeah.
He's such
I
an
love
asshole.
It the frog at the very beginning of the chapter who says, "I saw everything that happened. Things may look bad now, but maybe they'll get better. Keep on going."
He's like, just
so inspirational.
He's good. Yeah, inspirational. Right. That's what I'll tell you, Mal. There you go. Also, this chapter features the appearance of the "someone joined your party, but they're a dick" fanfare.
Ah!
To compliment the earlier, "you got an item, but it strongly suggests that someone you know may have been maimed" fanfare from chapter 1. So many negative fanfares.
So, anyway, after you fight the Cactus Wolf, you go down into this underground facility where you drive this kind of hover car called the Pork Bean.
The main land vehicle of the Pigmask army called the Pork Bean. It's the floating ball.
Yep.
Floating bean-like
it goes
vehicle.
Through tunnels and stuff, and it gets around pretty quickly.
It's amazing how much stuff they've already, like, they've got, like, this whole tunnel and underground transport network, and Facade hasn't even appeared in the village yet. Like, this is obviously a plan that the Pigmasks had very carefully orchestrated, I think.
But, like, what confuses me is that they had this entire tunnel, like, this, you know, a tunnel built. And, you know, clearly this isn't something that they just, like, erected overnight. But there's like, this huge gate in the cave by Tazmili Village, and the cave is sealed. And just makes me wonder why no one ever, looked at it and was like, "I wonder what's in here."
Because,
like, you go in there, and there
really...
are just lots of presents.
They're really stupid and naive. That's why.
Also, like, Tazmili Village is... Isn't Tazmili Village the only populated area of the Nowhere Islands before the Pigmasks show up?
I think
it is.
So, they could have been digging pretty much everywhere outside of the village, and not a lot of people would know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you go through there, You at the end, you fight some gray slimes or something.
Yeah,
they're kind of annoying.
They're
kind of annoying. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get into Tesmilla Village proper. The exit is one of the graves.
Yeah.
And
the tunnel.
And the zombies will chase you, but I just ignore the zombies. And when you get to the village, like we said before, Facade and Soulstar are supposed to be like a traveling act sort of thing. And the best QTEs in a game I have ever seen introduced in this game.
So good.
Yeah. Like, you rest at the inn, but eventually you get to the town square and Facade's like putting on a show.
Well, no. First he does the whole thing with Butch and buying his pigs.
Yeah.
Right. He has you he does the dance in the town square and he's trying to tell the villagers about being happy and prosperous.
I really love his speech that he gives. Like, the music starts playing and he talks about like all the weird things that have been going on and like how,
which is his fault.
Yeah, and which is his fault. And he goes on about, he doesn't actually offer a solution. He just keeps talking about how happiness is like the most important thing and how it should be like valued above all else, you know, pleasure. And he offers to just give these people like possessions to make them happy. It is definitely the speech that he gives is definitely like the central point, I think, of, or at least the start of Itoi's very, very long, drawn-out criticism of just materialism in modern society and how it has damaged, or how he believes it has damaged our society to a point where the damage done is irreparable.
Because the solution that Facade has, that will give these people happiness is happy boxes, which I don't. It's totally unclear what they do, but they look like television sets, so I'm assuming it's television sets.
And you have to transport them within 22 minutes to the.
I think I want to mention though, like, a lot of people get around when Facade is giving a speech, but a lot of them walk off.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah. Even
people with
Tesmilla are really naive, but they know this guy is shady, so they don't stick around.
Only four people are interested, and one of them only does it because her husband.
No, because the husband and wife both bought happy boxes individually, and then one of them cancels their order.
Yeah,
when you give it to the other.
But Facade tells you, okay, you have 20 minutes, go deliver all the happy boxes. And it's kind of ironic that you like this sort of really miserable, tortured monkey with a shock collar that gets shocked every 3 minutes and is suffering carrying these huge-ass boxes is going to make all these people happy. But it's basically...
Does Mapson tell you where the people live?
Yeah, yes, he does.
Yeah,
he loves marking maps.
Mapson's a guy who will just, like, mark your maps.
Well, yeah, we can talk about Mapson.
Yeah, he's such a, like, he's a great throwaway character who's just like, oh... I see you want something from the map-owning and map-loving Mapson. It must be a map. He just knows everything about maps. He has no character other than maps, but he's great.
Yes.
He has a one-track mind.
Yeah. Chapter 3 is definitely... This part is definitely the height of Facade's dickishness, because he tells you that he'll give you a reward if you could deliver all the boxes in less than, like, 22 minutes or something, and then you get in there and... Basically, regardless of how long you've taken, even if you've taken less than 20 minutes, he's like, "No,
23 minutes,"
and then he gives you an electric shock.
I thought he just fucked up.
It's like, no, he's just because he changes it. He says like, "You were supposed to bring it to me in under 3 minutes. How could you?"
Oh. Yeah, he's just being a douche.
Also, I think we forgot to mention what the QTEs actually were.
All right, yeah, he makes you dance in front of the villagers.
You have to dance.
You've got the D-pad, right? And different buttons on the D-pad will make you do a different dance. Yeah. And you've got to do the right dance.
And do a backflip.
Yeah. He's like, look how happy my monkey is.
The monkey is not happy at all.
Is not happy, but he sits there smiling and clapping his little hands like, circus animals or whatever.
He's doing it for his girl, man.
He is indeed.
Yeah, that's what it tells you when you name him, is that he'll do anything for his girlfriend.
So this is going on at the same time as Duster is looting Asoi Castle.
Yep.
So the next morning, Facade and Salsa head over to the castle because the pig masks are invading it and they're in trouble.
Mm.
Duster and Wes are beating the shit out of their soldiers.
Yeah.
And also, at this point, you actually hear the pig masks talk, which I found quite surprising. I thought they would remain silent the entire game, except for a few, like,
They have characters. Some funny lines later in the game.
Yeah.
They're basically hugely bumbling soldiers, but despite this, you'll still really hate them, and they are, like, still dangerous, I guess, to people around. They're pretty easy to beat.
Jackbooted thugs.
Yeah. And,
They're also, like Vulcan Skull. There are a lot of bulks and a lot of skulls.
Yes. I believe their rations are just like bags of pork rinds.
Oh, yeah.
Pork
my God.
Chips. As you can tell, they have kind of a pig theme, what with their name and masks and
no, rations. Their vehicles are pig-shaped.
Yeah. Have like a pig snout logo. So you're going through Osho Castle. You don't go through the same way, exactly. You get to a secret passage you couldn't enter before, and it's the same kind of one as the one Wes got through.
And it also has a dance associated with it to open it, and by sheer monkey intuition, Salto is able to read the scriptures that instruct you in the dance, and he does the dance, and it opens.
And his dancing power opens the door and gets another like secret area in Osho Castle.
Yep, and there's skeletons down there, so I'm sure Happy really liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, Shiri skeletons.
Skeletons. And Big Bros.
Big Bro has a very creepy face.
Who are bigger than Big Bros.
And these ones actually will come after you and are genuinely a threat.
Yeah, Lil Big Bro is the heavy hitter.
You don't actually have to fight many of these enemies, so because I don't think there's actually a proper... Actually, there is a boss fight, but you have...
a bit later
we'll get
on.
To it there. But you can't fight these enemies.
There's not much point fighting things with Salsa, really. At this point in the game, I got the old guy who sometimes appears in the... We didn't really talk about Hot Springs. In Mother 3, Hot Springs
That guy.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of weird, but I like it. It's... Like, it's another weird thing. This game has this thing going on with, like, cleanliness and how, like, things related to cleanliness are always, like, positive.
It's next to godliness.
Yeah, so the hot springs heal you, and very, very occasionally there's, a tiny random chance that when you go into a hot spring, there'll be an old guy in there, and you can talk to him, and he'll just say, "Yes? Like, what are you doing talking to me in a hot spring?" It's great.
He will show up no matter where the hot spring is. Hot spring in the basement of the haunted Osho Castle. He will be in the hot spring.
Yeah, he doesn't care. He's just in
I
there.
I get a feeling. He loves hot springs. Ketsy said we forgot to mention the hot springs. I feel we're going to be saying we forgot to mention something or other a lot of times.
Yeah,
we already
I forgot to mention that the pig masks say "Oh my pork," and that's my favorite exclamation.
I was going to get to it.
My pork. I say that in real life. I'm not even kidding. I'm not even joking.
You open up the thing that lets the water out, which washes...
which was actually what... Yeah, washed...
Duster's party.
Kumatora and Wes out.
Yep. So you see Duster and Kumatora and Wes, like, wash out from below you.
Yep. Is it at this point that Facade steals the money from the well?
No, he did.
Or he did. That.
What a fucking jerk!
Dissent amongst the villagers.
So you get back to the Yedo Inn with a Facade. Job not really completed since they didn't get the thing they wanted.
Also, of course, when Facade finds out that they've started arguing, he's like, "You must seek happiness. You must have happy boxes." He's not for selfishness.
Kumatora and Wes bust you out of Facade's evil grasps.
When you try to leave through the door, when they come to the window, if you try to leave through the door, then you get shocked because Facade rolls over in his sleep onto the remote.
This got me so many times do it. I realized you had to go to the window.
Yeah, still have
like he'll do it every single time.
When you go out the window, Wes goes in to steal it. And you get shocked again because he bumps it by accident.
Yeah, and then he brings it back to you, and I think Kumatora says something like, "Little monkey, you destroy it." And then he like Salsa goes ape shit and starts smashing it because you can tell he's so mad.
And you get shocked just one more time.
And he shocks himself one last time while he's destroying it, and it's just you think, oh god, that monkey has had a hard life. Monkey. That poor fucking monkey, man.
Salazar, he joins up with Kumatora and Wes, and he's alright now.
Where did Buster go off to again?
He got washed away or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So at this point, Fassad comes after you, and you try to escape through the forest, but the pig masks come after you in your tank. So
in
you fight
their tank?
In their tanks. So you fight the tank. You fight one of the tanks, and it's kind of tricky.
Pretty hard fights. Thunder bombs help.
Yeah.
If you pick those up from behind Wes's house.
I love how, like, about halfway through the battle, you smash up the tank enough that the pig mask has to open up the hatch and look out.
Yeah. Very Metal Gear Solid.
Sometimes he just gets mad.
Mask inside, after you blow up the tank, but it keeps fighting, but all he does is, like, get a cannonball and, like, throw it at you.
Sometimes he just rages about the tank.
Throw it back at him.
After you beat the tank, I believe. Of course, Fassad is very surprised and exclaims, I think it's this fighting tank.
They come after you with more tanks.
Yeah. Oh, my pork!
That made me laugh so much.
So then, Lucas shows up with the baby Draco.
They escaped to the forest, I think, or some area.
No, they're in the forest already.
They get cornered by the pig masks, and Lucas shows up with the Drago.
He shows up the baby Drago.
Yeah, mother Drago, or is it the father Drago? I don't know. Anyway, the Drago comes
Lucas
whistles and the Drago
destroys the pig mask.
Yeah, like completely destroys
it. Great.
It's great.
It's very Jurassic Park.
And it's a great way, I think, of like setting up Lucas as like the protagonist from here on in and showing like his development, I guess. His character development.
Because he's not really been doing much.
Yeah, he didn't do much that whole game except cry and like just feel sorry. But I think that's kind of the turning point in his character. Although he's also pretty fucking messed up.
The baby dragon is probably one of my favorite characters. It's so fucking cute.
I'm watching a video of the Drago's attack now.
Fucking baby dragon.
The adult Drago just bites a pig mask in the head and just flings it away. It's great.
Yeah.
That's the end of chapter 3.
That's the end of chapter 3. Got to chapter 4, I believe, although I haven't like played past. This is where the like main bulk of the game starts, and you control Lucas.
Yeah, the real Mother Free starts here.
Yeah.
And you do control Lucas.
It's like
up until the end of the game.
A lot more exciting, in my opinion.
Yeah, the gameplay definitely goes a step up because you actually start getting into the PSI and you actually get your party members permanently. Because I can understand why they switch perspectives a lot, but it does get frustrating to like play with a character and level them up and then have them taken away and play another character.
Right, in
an
RPG game, that's not a very good thing.
I understand why they had to do it, but.
Do they give them back to you at all?
I think, although I'm not sure, but in chapter 4...
I never know, remember, me and Fishheads haven't played past.
Okay, well, whatever.
We leave up to you, dear listener, to find out.
Indeed. So, what were your guys' general thoughts on this? Anything you think we missed out, or anything you'd like to sort of talk about?
One thing we missed out in the very start is, like, you wake up in your pajamas, like in Earthbound, and your mother doesn't let you go outside in your pajamas.
Until you change.
I find it actually really creepy. I was like, if you say no to get out of your pajamas, your mother's just like, well, Lucas, you can stay in here forever. That's great.
If you don't know how to dash at that point, but if you dash into her, she just says, ow, I surrender, and gives you a nut bread.
Aww. Which you will not use because it's just a tutorial area.
Yeah. But it's little things. There's a lot of little things.
There are so many little things in this game. It's great. My thoughts on the game so thus far. I've really enjoyed it. That opening chapter really like surprised me and set the tone.
Yeah.
Chapters 2 and 3 slowed it down a bit.
I disagree with chapter 3. I love chapter 3. Chapter 2 slows it down, definitely.
Yeah.
I played the game like three bursts. Chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3. Chapter 3 was probably one I didn't like most because of the feeling of powerlessness, although that was probably intentional.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I've got high hopes for this game. I'll bump them down. It's good so far.
I really do think that Mother 3 is a really funny game. Like, it got to the point where I stopped writing down lines that made me burst out laughing because there were just so many of them that I was like, screw it. But it's a really funny game, and I think it works so well as a tragicomedy because it's so funny and so tragic.
That's why I think about, like, Dark Things. In my opinion, Dark Things need a little bit of light, or else you just won't care eventually.
If it's just really dark all the way through, it's just, like, too edgy for me, grim dark shit, basically. But you need the juxtaposition, you know.
Yeah.
Like, Off does that in a good way, too. Like, it's an extremely bleak game, like, more so than this, but some of the Elson's dialogue is so damn funny to me.
My opinion.
Even though it's kind of sad at the same time. Yeah.
There's a little bit of hope, even though there's a lot of bleakness. That makes the hope all the more brighter, and the bleakness all the more darker.
Indeed,
Earthbound is a lot worse this pacing in a lot of ways, because it's a funny game up until the last 3 hours, and then it's just horrible.
Well, I mean, Earthbound did kind of a very different thing to Mother 3.
Please no spoiler.
I won't spoil anything about Earthbound.
Even though someone else spoiled the final boss for me in that, goddamn.
Yeah, Earthbound it wasn't a sad or a tragic game like Mother 3 is, but it was definitely weird and quite disconcerting at times.
Yeah.
And I like how that's juxtaposed with the game's silly humor, but I think Mother 3 is slightly more effective just from an emotional standpoint, although Earthbound Final Battle is amazing. So there's other thing I want to talk about that I think... has anyone here read the blog that Tomato and Jeffman and Bew and all those guys did as they were translating the game? Okay, I read it. Okay, this patch was a massive undertaking. Like, it's probably the single most advanced, from a technology perspective, the single most advanced and most difficult fan translation that I've heard of. The whole thing was an assembly level hack.
Dear Jesus.
It was worked on by a load of programmers, several emulator authors. The game had something like 8 different routines that drew text onto the screen, all of which were programmed in totally different ways, and all of which had to be hacked individually with assembly and nothing else.
They fixed
bugs that were in the game. Like, some of the text routines were only even used for like a minute, but they still needed to be patched. And some of them, like the main dialogue system, was okay, but some of them, like he keeps complaining about the item text and the battle screen, was programmed by someone who's just a huge asshole and did everything in the most bizarre roundabout way possible. And also, they keep complaining about the compiler that was used for the game, like how it's really weird and antiquated and does things stupid. And I won't go into detail, but he said that switching from drawing one letter in a sentence to drawing the next is around 100,000 to 300,000 instructions in assembly.
Jesus Christ.
And despite all that, not only did they fix bugs...
Am I the only other one here who kind of understands low-level hardware stuff?
I have a very vague knowledge of it.
I mean,
the
word...
Maybe
a bit less vague, but still pretty vague.
The word 100,000 to 300... You know, 300,000, those like are big anytime.
They drew text onto the screen with sprites. The GBA can only display 128 sprites at once.
But why?
So
I
know, right?
That's not
why
right.
would they
that's
do
not,
that?
Okay.
So the guy was just like, oh, well, because it's in Japanese, it's a very dense language, we'll only ever need 128. And then when they were translating it into English, they were like, why is the game crashing all the time? What's going on? And it's because it was kept trying to draw more than 128 letters and crashing.
Did they have to re-encode it to use text?
What they ended up doing was something that Jeffman called sprite welding. So they would create a sprite that was like 2.5 letters, and then the next sprite was the next 2.5. And because all the letters are variable widths, it was a huge pain in the ass. But yeah, they added so many features like auto word wrap that wasn't in the Japanese version, and just like auto formatting as well, because a lot of the Japanese text is manually pre-formatted. They added a feature that tells you when you've got all of the entries in the battle memory, which is pretty cool. If you're a completionist, you'll probably love that.
We didn't talk about the battle memory.
Battle memory, it's pretty useless. It gets ignored by a lot of people, but all of the enemies have funny little descriptions of them, and you should read it as you play.
It'll let you practice out their respective.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Rhythm beats, things, yeah, because they'll never. You can fight them.
I had no idea you could fight things in the battle memory.
On their entry, there's a prompt to press start to initiate a battle with them, and in the battle, they won't attack you, so you can just freely practice the rhythm of their fight.
I like how we bookended this episode with talking about the technical stuff, beginning and end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Episode 2 of Mother 3 is going to be start of Chapter 4 to end of Chapter 6, and then after that, the third part is going to be from beginning of Chapter 7 to the end of the game. Should we do it on a Sunday this time?
Let's try. We were going to do that, but then my computer
exploded. Yep. His computer exploded. He was going to do the podcast in a laundry room.
Were you really?
If it had come to that, I would have done it. But the, could risk
a laundry room.
Yeah.
laundry room.
I thought you were in the laundry room right now.
No, I'm not. I'm in my own room.
I would know if he was in a laundry room. I know the acoustics of laundry rooms.
So, yeah.
They have an acoustic to them?
Yes. Very specific.
Can I just round this out now?
Let's round this out. Okay. So, thank you, everyone, for coming to record this episode. Thank you to all the people who, like, you know, Tomato and all that, and who translated the game, because they did really amazing work. And we will see you next time.
And if you haven't played Mother 3 and you're still listening and have,
we just told you about everything in the game, so
yeah, what the
please,
fuck, go play it
for the love of God. Play the first like 3 chapters of this game. I don't know, maybe watch something in the background if you know everything already and don't want to go through it again. Just get through it, get to Chapter 4, and keep like playing along with us. That'd be nice.
Or just download a save file. You can do that too.
Yes, I'll post a link. There's a thing called the Froggy Save Archive online, and it has saves at all the save frogs in the game at a reasonable but not too high level. And then there's a tool that's distributed with it that lets you rename the characters if that's your style. So you can basically pick it up and start anywhere.
That's not a bad idea.
I guess if you've listened to this at your own peril and you're like, maybe I'll play that, go get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can start. You don't have to replay what we told you about. You can just start from the next episode. Yeah.
It's also useful if our save files die, which my flashcard is kind of shitty, so that is a risk.
Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Hope it wasn't shit. Hope you play Mother 3 with us. Bye.
Tonda Gossip.
Bye.
Anyone else?
Bye.
Bye.
Tonda Gossip.
Please like and subscribe.
Shut up! That really helps me out. And what's up, guys? Animus here. Just piss me off every time I hear it. You guys say it all the time. So annoying. Shut up. Finish up with you. Goddamn it.
It's supposed to be stupid and annoying.
No. Well,
good luck. You succeeded.